never understood why we do it that way. Seems to me we should budget for what we are now and tell them that's where we're gonna hold the rates again.
Shelby?
Senator Duncan, I have made this plea before you before. Being the new kid on the block, you've got some institutional memory that I don't have. And as a matter of fact, what you brought up has just been brought to our attention the last few days. And we intend to make some correcting moves in the budget that we submitted so that doesn't happen.
So it doesn't happen in FY92?
That's correct.
You're not forecasting. Okay, but I'm still concerned about the increase in FY91 for health benefits because I thought it was going the other way instead of up. I'd like to have the answer to that as far as that goes. Appreciate it. I guess I...
No, would you give us the detail by tomorrow afternoon again?
Yes, sir.
Senator Duncan and, of course, the committee. We wish to put this bill together, but we need this backup information. Cheryl, you may proceed. Next area.
Okay, Section 14 for the public defender. These are 5 felony cases that they've already had, so I assume if they don't get, if it's not fast-tracked, then they aren't able to pay all their bills. Is that Kevin here to attest to that?
Kevin, do you wish to comment?
If the committee desires it, sir, that is the case. There are 5 cases. The public defender agency typically budgets a set amount for these types of cases, and when they come in, running $20,000 or $25,000.
Write us a letter supporting that too. Yes. You're busy, but we're going to have it. That's somewhat a lightning rod area. So.
Yeah. Section 15 about outstanding obligations for the public defender agency.
Yeah.
And from FY90, my guess would be they could go in the regular. Office of Public Advocacy. They've been in supplemental situations before.
They will. Mr. Chairman, Office of Public Advocacy would have to suspend payments on April 1st to contractors without a supplemental. And this is the same situation they were in last year. They can do that. We ended up paying interest last year, and that would be the case again this year.
Well, explain it to us. Write us another note, just an explanation.
So, Mr. Chairman, are they suggesting this should be fast-tracked or regular?
Fast-tracked.
Cheryl was saying it could be regular, and he was saying it could be fast-tracked. I tend to believe Cheryl.
Well, Mr. Chairman? I'm not going to take sides between the two of them. What I think is important is how much more is it going to cost us if we go regular if we're ending up paying interest to people. I mean, I think we need to know that. It seems to me to pay interest doesn't make any sense if we can get the money to them in time that they can make their payments when they're due.
Mr. Chairman,
for
I appreciate your vote, but I would yield to Kevin's expertise here. And then 4-1 is the date, and the irregular is not going to pass before then. I would suggest that it be considered fast track.
Sure. I've had to have a little fun, too. I don't get much out of this business. You're just making me an arch conservative here, Shelby. What are you doing?
We're going to keep working on you.
I think I'm going to go in with a meat axe here. The rest of them are going.
I kind of like their conservative philosophy. So
gotcha. Yes. Yeah, we kind of like your conservative philosophy. The next item that you're advocating for fast-tracking?
Mr. Chairman,
and please kind of feel that you have to have substance behind it, of course.
Of course. This is for increased postage costs to mail paychecks. And they won't be able to mail them after May 13th if they don't get the money. So if you have a 75-day session, then we wouldn't need it in the...
Well, let me tell you something about that. When stamps were 3 cents, we got $4,000 for stamps. Stamps are 29 cents now. We get $4,000. And every time I turn around, I don't touch the dime. I buy stamps. Every time I turn around, they tell me that's part of my salary. Every time I turn around, the press loves to list it as part of my salary. I'm just getting tired of it. It's not your fault, but I want to comment from any PR and post I have.
We've been taking enough flack the last few weeks. We can take whatever you got.
So it's postage, $700,000 for postage. I'd love to see one newspaper.
No,
45.
Excuse me, I'm in the wrong category, as you suspected. The next item.
Okay, Kevin tells me, Mr. Chairman, that this is for a June payment, so it could be regular.
This can be regular.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
You have the floor, sir.
By then, they might even be able to renegotiate these leases and get that down. Isn't that what the commissioner is proposing to do?
Well, sir,
I'm just kidding you, of course.
That effect is going on. The date on these, Mr. Chairman, the lease payments for June go out the last week of May. get if there's a bill, a slower track bill that would pass and appropriate money by then, that would be adequate.
Well, we just may not put a dime in. You may fire some people and so on.
Mr. Yes, Chairman, I was here in the meeting a couple days ago and we talked about the leasing situation and some of the new ideas the administration had on leasing. Are most of these leases coming due then after July 1st of this year, or is this what you're trying to tell us by adding this additional amount that these leases aren't going to be due? Because there is a savings incurred in the new budget that you have projected, I don't know, $2 or $3 million. I can't remember the exact, $2.3 million, $2.4 million.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ewing, on the leasing budget, we had legislative intent in our budget last year was to consolidate, renegotiate to the extent that we can. $1.5 million was reduced on the budget. We consolidated and reduced $1 million of that, and we're still short $500,000. And that was for leases that are currently being renegotiated and will be contracts that are due before June 30th.
Mr. Chairman, if I might continue then, what is your cost estimate for next year then in cost savings?
It's
$2.8 million, I believe, is the amount.
And then and the program on that is either they either reduce the leases or the program feed it. So if
then we get down to a number of items which I think we've had testimony on. Where is the next step? I'm not sure we touched Civil Air Patrol.
Mr. Chairman, they yep. indicate that they do need these dollars by March 15th.
CAP?
Yeah.
Then March 15th, and what is that for, rent?
It's for personnel, aircraft maintenance, and hangar insurance, the total amount.
Personnel maintenance, insurance. Then on the next page takes us, unless I'm going too quickly and I'm missing something, but it seems like we took the earlier testimony, it takes us down probably to about item 29.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. These are for organizational grants to the...
statutory?
Yes.
And it has to go out?
I don't know what the deadline is. I'll be glad to get you that tomorrow, by tomorrow.
Fine. Please let us know.
Question on that. Okay.
Yes.
If these boroughs that are under pressure, which this one here was to organize, if the funding didn't come through, would that mean that they would go back to an unorganized status?
I'd be glad.
They would love that.
We're going back to territorial status after the governor president takes all of Anwar. Hell, I guess we've been in territorial status for the last 30 years anyway, now that I think about it. We just don't know it.
Since 1968.
Right. Amen. Then it goes to community college and university. I think it's university will ask if you'll increase utility costs. Tell me about that.
Mr. Chairman, the university did specifically request that these be included. While some of them are smaller amounts, I think it's basically Fairbanks has the most cost and is in the most need, both for their fuel and for snow removal, the Section 34.
What do you mean, snow removal?
Increase.
They budget every year for snow removal. There's no more snow this year, less than there's been last year.
Well, in Fairbanks, they've had... record.
Really?
That's
so
really. Yours melts off the next day.
The University of Alaska, and there will probably be some additions. The University of Alaska has testified and came to my office and stated that they do have one further additional need of $20,000. And that's for the circumpolar health expenses for the 1991 medical expedition, translation, publication, reports of that expedition, and other appropriate expenses. I'm inclined to want to support that particular expenditure. Would you get us any information you can on it? The Vice President of Public Affairs came with that proposition.
It's your brother.
And I also have, can we pass this one around?
It's your brother.
Yes. Could you pass this around? Just for information and service. That apparently are bills and so on.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just, you know, a question. I just want to go back and comment on the University of Alaska Fairbanks. They, all over throughout the Fairbanks region, they've had a lot of snow this year, but what is always remarkable to me every year is that we always have unusual circumstances in Alaska that don't seem all that unusual to me, like snowfall.
Freezes.
Abnormally cold weather.
These kinds of things
just really don't compute with me. I mean, we've got the equipment, we've got everything else for snow removal. So if it snows twice a week rather than, you know, twice a month, why should it make all that much difference?
You need somebody to offer
it. It's like maintenance of buildings. We thought they would have built it in someplace or stole from something to maintain something over the years, too. Heck, now we got a $100 million maintenance job. Maybe our responsibility and maybe our failure, but think a little bit every year we go into some of it. I hear what you're saying, Sam.
But it's always described as
it's the damnedest
something
country for
unusual.
Emergencies.
Yeah.
So sure.
And Senator Adams has his share of
emergencies. We're going to change the wording of this.
$3 million or something.
Are there questions? This bill is pretty substantial. It's more than what we had anticipated. Senator Pochot and I had some look at it over the weekend. We're going to ask our staff to get together with yourself and kind of put together this legislation. And Anna, if you can, and Carol and OMB can get together, and I believe we ought to have Pat's staff, whenever you assign Pat to, too, just kind of quickly put together our notes and their notes and give us a rough bill tomorrow late tomorrow afternoon, and get the drafting council. We'd appreciate it, because that's the only way, you know, March is here, in other words.
Yeah, of course, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to kind of echo your half-facetious thought a while back about OMB being generous on this, and I have to keep reminding myself that I don't know, I can't remember when we passed an early supplemental bill. Maybe we have on a couple of things, but every year that I can recall, most of the supplementals pass in May, and somehow life goes on. And I don't know if we ever are going to get away from it appears after today that it's going to be very difficult to have a very small, lean, mean, early supplemental. It seems like we rapidly get into a lot of supplementals because everybody wants to be early. But we rarely, if ever, are early. We're always late, and we're always big, or I should say comprehensive. And it seems like if we are to be successful on an, quote, early supplemental, it's really, we have to convince all of us, and we have to convince the House, and that these are truly meritorious, early needed items. And I don't know, we've heard some, you know, kind of contradictions today in the original bills being submitted, and I think we really need to make a case for each and every one of these. And if there's you know, your input as far as what's the minimum absolutely necessary that has to be for March and April as opposed to May and June, that's really what we're going
to do. You may well want to set that up in that way, because I was thinking tomorrow we'd have a marking up session, which is going to reduce some in total, perhaps, that shouldn't be reduced to meet, you know, a rough amount, rough allocation. I had hoped at the end of last week to get together with the Senate finance members for a look at revenue projections, budget capping, individual, what the House has done, what the Senate has done, proposes to do, and what the governor has already done. We have all that information available for explanation, and when is the best time for the senators to meet before we start actually sending out substantial supplementals out of this committee, because they will all impact and really seriously impact the availability of funds for the general fund and capital budget and bills. Any large supplemental is going to do that. If we go down to $15 oil, if we're going to choose a $19 amount, that's another story. But anyway, we have those figures. We're going to ask for one more time a revenue projection out of the administration, but we have three sets of figures. We've gone with every possibility, so I just want to sit down with the members almost at their convenience. Now, sans time that you have to go to other committees. Yes, Al?
Mr. Chairman, I think any new time from this week on is fine with that.
Is this noon? Is tomorrow noon a good time?
Yes, that's fine.
That's probably the most open time for it. Why don't we meet up? We'll meet in my office tomorrow noon, and we can always go from there. That's great. We'll have people here to explain how we arrived at and what we did, and for you to fine-tune them.
Just a bit of information. Just a few minutes ago, well, approximately 20 minutes ago on CNN News, it's unconfirmed out of Baghdad, but they believe that Hussein has ordered the troops out of Kuwait. But it's not. They're trying to confirm the report from Baghdad.
Cease fire and they move. Well, Kuwait will not impact the oil business for a while.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might add that oil pricing on Friday, I believe, was $13.90.
Yeah.
So I think we do have to watch that pretty carefully, even though we had pretty high figures.
Well, when we came down here, they were worried that they were giving us $26, $27 figures. But at $15, we don't have any capital budget. Unless that's just a fact.
Mr. Chairman, before we adjourn, I guess Senator Pichot is correct that I think it's a generous supplemental. I think, just looking at it, I guess the question is that it's going to be sort of ungenerous as soon as the day turns. When we get into 92, all of a sudden we're going to have all these unallocated reductions like the University of Alaska. Do you feel you can, between now and then, you can cope with all those problems, and next year we won't have to worry about this?
We won't have to worry.
Everything will be great. All of a sudden the new fiscal year will turn into a new day.
That'll do it.
And we'll be able to operate everything on a lower basis, but for right now, we just need some help.
Mr. Chairman, on that note, however, when we looked at the supplemental request from the agencies, it was the exception if we funded their full request. And for that reason, because we're trying to ratchet things down slowly into 92, so with that backdrop, that's our thought.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Just one question for information. As I'm trying to put together all these supplementals and figure out where we're going, of course, we've done a separate supplemental for longevity bonus. We consider that fast track,
yeah.
I assume.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the other supplementals, we've been talking about agency supplementals here, but the Education Foundation Formula Program, municipal assistance, whatever else might be in that package, is that considered a fast track supplemental also? Or where is that standing in relationship to everything else?
You're speaking about Senate Bill, House Bill 5?
Yes, 92 operating budget. There's no supplemental for education?
It's somewhere in the pipeline.
Yeah, but it's not in our committee, at least.
I thought Senate Bill 5 was
It's 92 full funding for foundation.
Okay, but so then I go back. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm back. So I go back to the question. Is there, is it not, is education, because they set their budgets after we before we'd appropriated money. The veto came down after they had set their budgets. It came down in July, I think, right? Which means school districts, municipalities were operating off of a certain level of funding, and they have less. So are we including,
I'm mentally hoping that, and optimistic, that the committee will consider some of that supplemental for education, yes. But we don't have a vehicle, nor have we written them.
We don't have a vehicle, although we've got a vehicle here we could use if we had a figure on it. That's why I was wondering.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify that, of course, there is a supplemental for full funding for funding the foundation formula based on more students than expected. That's been proposed in the so-called slow track bill, not for fast track. And maybe you can speak to the rationale, but I mean, one rationale is it's not going to hire more teachers this year to get their full funding between now and...
Well, except, and maybe we need someone to speak to that, except it seems to me with school districts, they probably had those contracts in hand before they knew that there was going to be a decreased amount, so it could cause cash flow problems with school districts if they don't get it before
June 1st.
That's right.
If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, except the amount relative, the amount prorated by all the districts is probably, they're really talking about, they need it, you know, in June to meet the last month's payroll.
I don't know. I guess I was just asking that question. Maybe we should discuss that tomorrow also.
I think we need to discuss within the framework of funds available where we want to put our priorities. And there's obviously at least four obvious areas. The supplementals, the bills, the operating budget, and the capital. Those are four historic areas of... do we have funds to handle, and how much of what percentage? So I think that is tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm just...
But I'm out here, I'm sitting thinking we need something for a supplemental to last year's cuts, all right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And we have not heard about that. Maybe we need to get that discussion going tomorrow also as to what the impact is on school districts and municipalities around the state. So we can make a decision. Do we fast-track it? Do we do it later? What do we do?
Yeah.
We have not discussed that.
Well, we're adjourned then, and we'll have a rough bill tomorrow afternoon.
Why don't we get started? Today we're going to hold a public hearing on SB 1 and SB HB 5, dealing with key elements of the education budget. We do have a number of sites on teleconference today, and I know there's probably people in the audience desiring to testify. We're going to go schedule the teleconference time at least 3 hours. I suspect, though, that we will not accommodate everybody probably seeking to testify, so I would certainly urge people to limit their comments to no more than 2 or 3 minutes so that we can get around the state as much as possible. We have some of the bill sponsors here today that we're going to hear from first, and we've also made a special invitation for school districts and other school-related groups to speak, and we're going to try to accommodate representatives speaking for districts and other school-related organizations or education-related organizations. We are expecting Representative Navarre in lieu of Representative Ellis, the sponsor of HB 5, who apparently is still circling the skies of Juneau waiting for the fog to lift. But we do have with us, I believe, Senator Eliason, who's the prime sponsor of SB 1, setting deadlines for action on funding public education. And Senator Eliason, we would welcome testimony if you desire at this time on SB 1. Senator Adams.
Mr. Chairman, before the President gets up to speak, is it your wish that we're going to hear public testimony today? I do have amendments for both SB 1 and House Bill number 5. What is your pleasure today, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Adams, I'm chairing the meeting today, but clearly this topic represents over a quarter of the proposed operating budget, and Senator Curtula is watching it diligently as how it fits into the entire operating budget. I think that our purpose today is only to hear public testimony. We are not in a position to move at this time, and Senator Curtula may want to address more specific questions today or later on how early education funding fits into the larger budget, operating budget questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. This is an old friend that's been before the legislature a number of times, but I'll just go through it briefly, and I understand there's 15 sites out there who would like to testify on the bill. Our Senate Bill 1 states that the legislature shall appropriate money for public schools, construction, debt retirement, public school foundation program, public transportation, and other appropriate funding for education later than April 7th of each year for the succeeding fiscal year. The ability of each local school district to wisely plan its education budget depends a great deal on knowing early the budget process what financial resources will be available. Senate Bill number 1 will ensure that by April 7th, which is an arbitrary figure, that date was established, I believe, 2 years ago by the Senate Finance Committee as a compromise, that local school districts will know exactly what the state's monetary contribution for education will be. This legislation also changes the date which a borough school district submits the school budget to the borough assembly from April 1st to April 30th. This change will allow each borough school district school board to submit a budget based on figures which accurately reflect the state's appropriation. An identical bill passed the Senate and House unanimously in 1989, but unfortunately legislation was vetoed by Governor Cooper. The passage of Senate Bill 1 will go a long way to assist local school districts in planning their educational programs. As we all know, there are many unknowns. The price of oil, of course, fluctuates from day to day, and the makeup of this legislature changes every 2 years, but I guess one fact remains constant. And that's our constitutional obligation to the public school system. Quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I think we're all just a little tired at times of passing this program in the waning hours of legislature. I would hope we could put this on a table and put it aside and look and go forward from there. It is our obligation. I think the quicker we meet that obligation, the better off the system's going to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Questions of the bill sponsor? Senator Lyson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I saw Representative Barr is here acting Representative Ellis, who's unable due to be with us. Representative Navarro, did you want to speak to HB 5?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had no time. For the record, my name is Mike Navarro. I represent District 5 in the State House. I also represent, the House and Representative Ellis, who's prime sponsor of the bill today. This bill is a straightforward education, full funding of education under current laws is not to be interpreted as what is maybe adequate funding, but it is full funding under current laws. There is also several other bills that are being considered for an increase in the foundation unit value. We're going to consider those at a later date. And given the governor's suggestion of a reduction of $35 million in the foundation program, the House thought that it was responsible to pass the full funding for education early and with the full unit value under the foundation program. We left out debt service, which is also a very important part of education package due to ongoing negotiations.
Thank you for your testimony. I would call the members' attention just for your information. We did put together a little chart showing some of the last year's proposals, the HICL original provisions and the 92 revised and HB 5 relating to the major categories of education funding and laying out those comparisons. They should be right behind the bill in your packet somewhere, hopefully. Then in addition, there's a breakdown by district of the how those monies would be allocated to the various districts throughout the state. Senator Petula.
I'm a bit curious, and I don't support the previous administration's view, apparently in veto, of the legislation you've discussed, Senator Lyson's discussed, and this is sort of all tied together. This is present at this moment. Senator Lyson's is general for now in the future. Do you remember, and I don't have it here, what the governor, Governor Cooper, when his veto message stated, we can find it, but I'm just wondering, what were the prime reasons for his veto of essentially the legislation that Senator Lyson has? And it covers, obviously, the need for this legislation now. Senator Lyson, do you have to remember?
I think his prime concern, Senator, it was at the time that you were putting forth too much of the budget too early.
Fine, we'll read it.
Senator Lyson, did you want to respond to that?
I mean, that's a question I have.
Could be you just felt a shortage of funds across the board that needed to be re-examined at that time. But I was just curious because, again, while I'm fairly agitated with the governor on this issue, this and the Pioneers issues, I always felt he wanted to give support to education.
He was concerned with the overall spending plan of the state.
Representative, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Petula, that's something that we always struggle with also, is whether or not the large portion of the budget that's related to education funding should be considered separate of the overall budget spending plan.
Other questions of Representative Navarro on HB 5? Senator Petula.
Probably hard to be an uninvited visitor to a lawn party, and it looks probably the way I'm going to look now because I just have a another question or two. It has always concerned me, as strongly as I do endorse education, and as much as I can, I'm concerned that it is certainly part of our constitutional responsibility. I see nothing more important than education in our responsibilities in the state. How do you feel that if the educational associations that combine, they feel that they didn't get a fair and reasonable portion of the budget, but in fact others do feel so, Once you pass this budget, aren't you subject to a lot of other lobbying for increases and supplemental additions? That is a political fact of life that will compete with the balance of the operating fund budget. I endorse these concepts, but I'd like you to comment, because we could be prepared for that type of an approach in subsequent to the passage, yet one more attempt to increase varying segments, and sometimes every one of those segments don't have statewide ramifications, nor indeed do they have true priority status. We're all people with an agenda, and some administrators have an agenda also that's apart from what you're attesting to or trying to do now. I'm just curious. And that's a question probably nobody should ask.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotullo, I'm curious about that also. I expect we'll be seeing some intensive lobbying to increase certain areas within the Education Foundation program, maybe even changing the formulas in certain respects. That's something that we have to consider at that time. This is simply, under the current laws that's written today, this is full funding for education, and whatever equities or inequities we see within that system, I guess, is our responsibility to try to change and make more equitable.
Other questions of the sponsor or the stand-in sponsor? Thank you, Representative. We have someone here in Juneau representing Ketchikan Education Association, Bruce Stanton. Mr. Stanton, if you desire to testify. If you could identify yourself for the record.
I am Bruce Stanton, immediate past president of the Ketchikan Education Association. One of our functions is to monitor our school district's budget. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District's budget is very thin. Our community has contributed close to the maximum amount allowed by law for the last 3 years. Our district has been forced to cut its budget. As an illustration, our district had a nurse in every school in the mid to late 1960s. This year we have one nurse for the entire district of 2,700 plus students. Our supply and equipment budgets are low. District employees have lost a lot of purchasing power during the last 8 years. Funding the foundation unit at $60,000 simply means more purchasing power cuts in all areas of the budget. The state of Alaska needs to fix the inequities in the foundation formula and inflation-proof education. If Governor Hickel's budget proposal for school foundation support becomes reality, it would devastate Ketchikan's educational system. Our community would be forced by the cap to cut our local contribution. I'm in reluctant support of House Bill 5, and that it's far superior to Governor Hickel's proposal.
Mr. Stanton, thank you very much. Questions? Senator Schultz?
Just one question. When you were talking about the inequities, what are you specifically referring to? Area cost differential?
Several things. Area cost differential is one. Another is what's commonly referred to as the single site and inequities. Part of it is just the fact that Ketchikan was one of the first districts to be at the maximum local cap for education, and other districts aren't at that point. And just by mere evidence of that, the funding formula seems to be inequitable. We can't support education any more than we are now, even if we wanted to.
Other questions? Mr. Stanton, thank you very much.
Thank you
for coming. We have a participant who has a time constraint, Mary Francis, and I'm sorry we don't have your station, your location. Is Ms. Francis, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. This is Mary Francis, superintendent of the Petersburg School District.
Please proceed with your testimony.
The opportunity to testify this morning. The comments I'm going to be making really affect both bills, because one is an amount bill and the other is a time bill. I'd like you to have a little idea of what it's like to prepare a budget at this time of the year. I'm currently preparing the school district budget. The information that I currently have for state funding is goes from the worst case scenario, which is as bad as $55,600 on the instructional unit, which for us means about a $250,000 shortfall. So the best case scenario that I'm hearing are $56,000 on the instructional unit, which will be as much as $500,000 in addition to what I have this year. Given that I have $60,000, I have to cut services again. The district last year cut staff, 1.5 teachers, a variety of classified positions. All year we've been funded in order to be able to have a student activity program. The district has never supported student travel at the state level that has always been paid by the parents as they are able to do and fundraising. We've deferred maintenance. We asked you with a March 15th deadline of notifying teachers that they will be non-retained, and I think you can all see we have a mess. I have no alternative but to non-retain excellent new teachers just because I have no idea the foundation funding, civil transportation, and what retirement will be funded at. I urge you to move the deadline up to March 7th, or at the very least to support the deadline of April 7th, which would be a great help. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you. Questions of the witness, Senator Cotulla.
Yes, thank you. What is the local contribution, either in dollars or what's your mill rate and sales tax rates that go into education in Petersburg? I know they've been long a contributor to education. I'm just curious what it is.
The local contribution this year is $882,804, translates to about six local mills. I think you're probably aware that there is a differential between what the local mill generates and what the CNRA.
Thank you.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Going to Matsu, Dorothy Jones with the Matsu Borough.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I could probably talk about education bills most of the day. However, I do believe strongly that the bill for early dates of funding would be appropriate. We oftentimes go through the same sort of scenario that Petersburg has described. MASU 2 is at the limit of our participation. We currently do contribute our maximum. Last year, when the cuts that occurred created some very severe problems within our district and within our world, I would urge you to pull fund the education bill at least to the $60,000 per unit. And I would also like to see full debt service of $134,500,000 put into that particular bill. Debt service is critical to a number of municipalities. With the cut that we had last year, it is important that we get some relief this year. Thank you very much.
Dorothy, thank you for your testimony. This is Pat Borcho. I had a question that I apologize for my ignorance. That's the highest number I've heard for debt service. I've been under the assumption it's $129 million. Is that a new number, or where did you get that number?
That would be for fiscal year 92. It's the way the debt service for the last sales of bonds, let's say, in Kodiak and Red Duck were factored in.
Well, that's a frightening thought. Maybe we'll have to check with the Department of Education on that. That has not been the figure we've been penciling in, at least. Thank you for your testimony. While we're in Matsu, we have L. Sorensen with the Matsu School District.
Thank you. I appreciate being able to talk to you. I would like to speak in favor of the early funding. Certainly, March would be better than April. April is much better than what we currently have. We appreciate any consideration in that area. I would like to add, however, that early funding without it being adequate funding really does not do what needs to be done. So I certainly encourage that those should be made. In reference to outgoing time and the funding, I would strongly encourage the committee to consider the elements of Senate Bill 54 and House Bill 53 and look those elements into this particular bill because it's critical that we have additional considerations In addition to that, each builder designs to solve several of the problems that have plagued educational funding across the state and have wide support. They should not be looked at as Christmas tree builds because that is indeed not the case. They are built that are interest-based, that look at the actual need we have here in education. I would remind committee that the MAT-2 has been a OLS and continues to be among the four OLS that districts in the state pupil funding. We have an interesting phenomenon here in that we really have all of the earmarkings of being a district that has isolated schools or village schools and also schools that have an urban nature about them. As a result of this, the type of funding that we are currently receiving is inadequate in that we do not have an area cost differential to address our small schools. Let me give you a quick illustration. In one school, our actual costs, our extended costs, are $12,000 per student. In another school, there are $4,000 per student. It simply says that and at the level of funding we're receiving, we are actually taking money from schools that are in critical need in order to keep the schools that are in isolated rural areas operational. So I would just summarize by saying that it's critical that we look at the Article 53 and Senate Bill 54 as you begin to structure the final elements of these two bills we're talking about and include those increases in there that we need. Were the governor's cuts to be sustained was simply interpreted in our school district because of the growth that's occurring, the functional out of the in excess of 20%. For
child
operational funds. Thank you very much.
Mr. Sorensen, thank you. Senator Kurtula, question?
Yes, Mr. Superintendent, it's good to have you on the phone, you all. We're questioning one particular area, and that is, since you couldn't really plan on the impacts that have been created in your area, what is the student increase in just maybe the last year, or maybe the last 2 years, if you can attest to that? Just in our area.
Okay, it's over 1,200 students, Senator Kurtula. We have very close to 10,000 students now. For the past 20 years, Senator, we have increased at 8% a year. When we think about that, we don't think of a long, steady increase. We think of up and down. Our best guess of next year is that we will have an additional 8% students. We did that simply because that's been our district for 20 years. And if you take the 8% that are coming at us next year, plus the 8% that we just had, and a portion of those are not covered in the budgetary process, plus the cut that we took last year, which I understand there will be a restoration of that fund in the supplemental. You combine those figures and you come up with an astonishing number of 24% increase in a very short period of time. Our best guess in the future is
8%. Can you relate quickly, because we haven't touched on it, but in our district, the Kenai, Fairbanks, even the Anchorage areas, school bus transportation, what are you finding there as shortfalls?
With the cut that occurred last year, that was a partial cut in our area, 10% in transportation. In fact, it continues to be the case with the new students. It interprets very rapidly to 15-17% cut in our functional budget. It can go as high as 20%, depending on how it's looked at. It becomes critical whenever you look at the transportation that be fully funded. Transportation might be one way of looking at area cost differential for areas like ours, because transportation becomes critical where in other areas transportation is not a factor at all. I hope I've answered your question, Senator. It just becomes a critical variable.
You've answered them enough so that the Senate Finance Committee and other members have a slight overview of some of the unique problems that are almost unique problems that you're suffering. I'm one further question, and this belabors slightly the question before us, but do you find the present system of school construction is going to accommodate or allow for Matanuska to accommodate the new 1,200 plus the projected increases?
What are you doing there? Do you find, have you found a method of providing school construction to accommodate that?
No, Pastor, not at this point in time. We have a need for 4 or 5 schools at this time. We have one school that is scheduled but the funding is there, but there are other schools that has some additions that need to be added to. But
attempting to get a sales tax of 3% to support schools on top of apparently the maximum allowable property tax. We may have to look at that maximum allowable, but do you see any other sources of fundings available to locally to provide for schools? Do you feel we're providing our fair share?
I think, Senator, if the sales tax goes through, that we suddenly become an exemplar area as far as local effort is concerned. We would have to add on more and to grow it. To look at several areas that have to put increased funding. However, when you start looking at substantial funding, the sales tax and property tax become the foundation of all that will live with in the future. I am hopeful that citizens will raise the sales tax. I think it's a positive effort. And Dorothy probably has some more comments on that than I may have, Senator, if I can defer to her for a moment.
Thank you. I don't want to occupy too much more of the time of the committee, but Dorothy, if you have a brief comment, please.
Very brief, Senator. Even with the sales tax, there will be a $6 million shortfall. The projection indicates that if the sales tax goes through without exemption in it, that we could realize a $6 million from a sales tax. However, looking at the projections and looking at what we have in funding, we're still $6 million short if that should occur.
Well, then you go back to what a second-class borough is supposed to be, provide for planning and schools, right? That's all the money you'll have totally if you get revenue sharing and so on.
And seriously, God, we'd be able to do our planning. That has been curtailed because of the cutback in funding. We're currently running shorted in our planning department. We're not addressing the needs of the city adequately. It is the borough our function, but we're really not doing our job like we should be doing, simply because there is no money and we can't seem to get it. All of our money goes into schools and whatever way else that we can do it.
Well, the new administration will be glad to give you Class 3 roads too. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just a real quick question. I know the sales tax question has come up a couple times. Is that sales tax going to be on the ballot now, Dorothy? Senator Ewing.
Senator Ewing, currently we're in a process of having public hearings on the question of whether or not it will be placed on the ballot. It will be finalized tomorrow night.
Okay, so you still have to get over the hurdle of making sure it gets on the ballot and then, of course, getting the people, you'd have to have a majority vote on it, I suppose.
Absolutely, sir. We couldn't do it without a minority vote, I'm sure.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stastny, did you care to offer testimony? Welcome. Please, if you could, identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm Shelby Stastny, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Our testimony regarding the bill before the committee basically is one of restraint. We all know that we have a significant obligation and responsibility for funding education in the state. I don't think there's anybody here who's going to question that. There may be some differences of opinion as to what full funding of our state education responsibility is. We've all seen the statistics regarding the state's revenue projections over the next number of years. We believe that with the state revenue projection the way it is, that the education community, as well as the rest of us in the state, need to look at how we deliver our services, make sure that we're delivering services in the most efficient and effective manner possible. We believe that to fully fund education, the Education Foundation formula, this early in the session before we consider the rest of the revenue needs that the state has would not be a wise thing to do. We believe that that with the decline in revenues that we know are going to happen, it's not a question of if, it's just a question of when, we know are going to happen, that we need to begin a gradual descent to fund services to a level that they can be funded on a protracted basis. And that this is a time when we need to start looking at that reduction in expenditure. So we believe that we need to spend some time and make sure that the educational dollars that we're allocating really are being spent efficiently and effectively, and understand that that there are some difficult problems. That's one of the reasons that the administration has agreed to include more education dollars than we had in our original budget. We see that with an increase in enrollment in education that maybe we did go a little far in the first place, but we definitely feel we need to start on a program to allow the education community to rethink how they deliver the services and if there isn't a more effective and efficient way to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Stastny. Our understanding is that your revision is going to add about $20 million additional monies to the foundation formula.
That's correct.
And that figure, of course, would still be about $35 million less than that proposed in HB 5, which is considered, quote, full funding under the terms of the formula as we know them now.
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I think that sounds about right. Yes.
A couple of the concerns, of course, that those of us, you know, in finance committees in both House and Senate looking at it have been that that $35 million still represents a huge share of the total cuts being proposed in all of the operating budget. That I'm not sure what your latest figures are, but that could still represent a third or so of all the cuts being proposed. And I think that philosophically, many of us have trouble rationalizing that large a segment coming out of education as compared to any number of other state functions.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, that probably would be true if it really were that large of a share. I think the thing that we fail to recognize, though, is that while $110 million is the cuts that we originally had anticipated in our budget, that $110 million was the cuts that agencies had, that the state government, the state budget took, after the $34 million increase in COLA and after the $33 million increase in health and social service programs. So a real cut in state government is more in the neighborhood of $180 million, or $190 instead of $110, and maybe that's the number you compare to see what the percentage. As a matter of fact, most state agencies are required to take about 11% under our original budget scenario, and the school reduction that we originally asked for was about 7%. So to say that it's a third or even a half under some people's original suggestion, I think is a little overstating the case.
I think the first part of your analysis is a good one, that the public, I think, fails to realize that even if we appropriate exactly the same dollars as the year before, there clearly is a real, in an economic sense, cut of 4 or 5, or now slightly higher than 5% real cut when measured against inflation. But I think the second part of the analysis needs to be completed, and that's the testimony we keep hearing from school districts, is that when we hold them constant at $60,000 per student in the formula, that they too are taking real cuts each year because their fuel bills go up, their teacher salaries go up, and they too are taking more cuts than the nominal dollars would indicate. And so in your analysis, the cut has to be compared against what the inflated costs of education and consequent state aid would be to that. So they too are suffering from the same problems of inflation, which frankly the legislature has not recognized in the last 2 years, even with, quote, full funding under the formula. So it's not to say that they have not already taken cuts.
If I may, I don't disagree with that. I mean, having an accounting background and some sort of economics background, I understand the concept, and I don't disagree with it. What I think we as citizens of the state, though, need to do, and we haven't yet stepped up to the plate to do, is to compare what it costs us to educate our students in Alaska and figure out why it costs us more to educate our students in Alaska and why, depending on how you measure, the results may or may not be there. I mean, by many tests, the results don't seem to be there, even though we're throwing more money at the situation. And that's the concept that we haven't yet stepped up to the plate to address. And that's what we're suggesting, that by as difficult as it is, we've all got difficult times to go through, and as difficult as it is, one of the way to get people to step up to the plate is, necessity is the mother of invention. An old saying my mother used to tell me. One of the ways to get us, to force us to do that, is to realize that the money ain't there, and it isn't going to be there, and we need to figure out, either that or the people of Alaska need to understand that, okay, we agree we need to spend this money on education, so let's raise the money someplace else, or let's cut something else. And if that's the answer of the people of Alaska, then we all need to work at doing that. But we believe first we need to step up to the plate and to find out how we can be more efficient in delivering the educational services that we're delivering.
Senator Curtula.
Shelby, of course, the state has the tax base, the broad tax base. Local governments do not want. You have to look to that. Next, not lost on me, that which was attested to by Dr. Sorensen. This is a huge state with a lot of rural, unconnected areas. It costs a lot more money to provide decent educational attainment, as our Constitution has directed, to the rural areas. Generalizations are not going to cover that. It's going to cost you money to do the job out there. If in the Mat-Su Borough District, when the educational costs vary from $4,000 to $12,000, and we're not very far off the highway lanes there, comparative to, say, these two senators' districts, Adams and Hoffman, let alone Schultz. You've got some costs out there that any of our sloganeering or any of our conventional wisdoms are not going to accommodate by saying whether we're doing a good or bad job out there, regardless of money we're throwing in. Those areas are going to cost you money just to get in the numbers game, proximity to transportation, supplies, and so on. And you're an economist, you understand that. Those are very expensive but required projects. Now, from my point of view again, first two places that we cut any significantly and we have any significant plan for reduction are schools and roads. To me, they're fundamental to state government responsibility. And again, the plan is out to reduce roads and reduce schools, as I see it. I don't support that as the priority areas for reduction. And as near as I can tell it, from both capital budget change on Class 3 roads and from the school reduced funding, I don't think we're getting the message. And that is, the government should be about roads and schools and roads and other transportation facilities first. We've got a lot of work to do in, one, either increasing state income, or two, reappropriating and having a new look at what our priorities should be. That's just my opinion. We've had this discussion before, but thank you.
Did you care to respond? Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The school foundation formula that you've been talking about with the money that you're putting back in, where does that, with the new governor's budget, what amount of money is that at an instructional unit?
I can't answer how much it is at an instructional unit. What it was an attempt to do was the same ratio as that we had proposed under our original proposal, increased by the increase in enrollment. Cheryl was in a meeting and didn't come with me. She probably had the exact numbers, but conceptually that's how it was derived.
But it would be less than the $60,000.
It would be less than $60,000.
$60,000.
Yes, it would.
And along with that question, Mr. Chairman, the message, I guess, that you're trying to give us, or at least give the people of the state of Alaska, is that at less than the current level, in other words, we have to somehow look at being able to fund that money from some other source. Is that, in other words, these costs are going to continue to go on. In other words, these contracts that have been negotiated have been done at a certain level. What's the long range picture that the governor has or that you have, how we're going to handle the educational costs of the state? In other words, instead of just saying this is how much we're going to appropriate, what's the long range view of the whole thing?
Well, I think the long range view of the whole thing is to all of us, whoever all of us is, get comfortable that we've done the best job we can at making sure that the educational, some people will call them extras that are provided by some school districts, are really things that we support and that we need, that we've done the best job possible in compensating our teachers fairly but not excessively, that we've done the best job possible of maintaining facilities and delivering the service. And when we've done that, then I think we can all get together and decide how we're going to fund these. If we're going to fund them through additional property taxes or sales taxes or through additional allocations of the resources that are already coming into the state. That's a long-term project, and our only plea now is that we understand that project needs to start and we need to start doing it. It seems that right now what ends up happening is that the school districts will come in, and I'm sure the school districts under the present mode of operation are strapped. There's no question that they are. Our only plea is that we figure out how to do business a little differently. I know when I first came to my office in the Office of Management and Budget and talked with our staff, what I asked was that we look at everything with new eyes, and not necessarily how it's been done before, but how can it be done differently and more efficiently, and we not take anything for granted, and that's what we're asking.
And then, Mr. Chairman, along with that, so you're going to assist the individual school districts in how they need to cut their budgets so that they can fall underneath where you are at the governor's level?
Well, we'll be happy to do that to the extent we can. I'm not sure that we've got the staff to go out and redo all of their budgets. And as a matter of fact, I think they're better at it than we are because they're there and they know what's there and what needs to be provided. So, but I think, frankly, there's many school districts that have excess funds out there. We get audited financial statements from all the school districts in the state. And as a matter of fact, I have a compilation of those school districts that shows $39 million in funds that have been stored away, if you will, by a lot of school districts. They've kind of forward-funded their federal programs. And that doesn't necessarily mean that's happening in all districts or that it was done inappropriately. What it does mean is that there are and have been some funds available.
Thanks. Mr. Stastny, if that information is available, we too would be interested in seeing that. Is that possible to get that?
Sure, I'd be happy to give you a copy of that.
Thank you very much.
They all like slush funds.
Well, there is, as I'm sure people know, there is a legitimate role for fund balances and for emergencies. In fact, our school district is most recently dipped into that fund balance for emergency people in the classrooms. I had one final comment just on efficiencies and costs of doing business. As you know, in our community, yours and mine, I think there was a kind of a public uneasiness with the amount of money going to the school district and whether or not they are utilizing those monies efficiently. And as you probably know, that one of the actions stemming from that was a fairly comprehensive audit of the Anchorage School District, directed by Assemblyman Begich and the Municipal Assembly. And my reading of that and the publicity on that audit was that the cost of delivering the service for our fairly large school district was not out of line with other similarly sized school districts in other states when adjusted for standard cost of living differentials between Anchorage and those districts. So I don't know where that leaves us in light of your statement of looking to more efficient ways of doing business. I think they in our district, they've started that. They got a big study. They've come back. They said they're not, at least that audit by independent auditor said they weren't out of line with the costs. That doesn't mean that they can't look into individual programs and do a better job, but my suspicion is that those kinds of cost savings are going to be around the fringes, not the basic, you know, large costs of delivering quality education to 42,000 kids. And I'm not sure that the several million dollars of cuts here is going to be found just reducing travel budgets or taking home cars at night. Senator Couture.
Repetition, but that study by Brian Conant some years ago, his name is former president of Harvard for post-Eisenhower years in education, said if you want good schools, you got to pay for them. That's they're going to cost money. The capitalist system has always interested me because it seems to work. You have to watch it so it doesn't rip and tear and maybe get non-competitive by combinations of people that get into trust programs. But generally speaking, you pay more for a corporate executive, you get a better one. And if you pay enough for school teachers, you're going to get better ones in the long run. I think that that's something you ought to look at if you're worried about the quality now. What would you do a decade from now using the capitalist system as our tool? Really provide totally competitive salaries for people out there that compete with the sexy jobs that are available in the private sector and in the scientific communities and so on. If you really paid for educators, obviously you'd still get some very dedicated people that will work for very little or nothing, and I know some of them. But you also get those that in a key moment transition have school debt to retire, have other problems, and have to look to other areas of activity for themselves in order to earn more money. Going teaching still isn't a very, very, very lucrative proposition compared to many other areas, many other professions. I'm not sure we ought to have a good look nationally at what would happen if we used the good old capitalist system of saying, hey, over a period of years, we're going to really increase these salaries and they're going to be competitive with all these other areas, let alone, say, some of those that are very high paying, like medicine. And I mean the MD portion of the medical establishment. Again, I'm not sure that you ought to think about those in your philosophy, and you may debate me, but I believe putting out the money there with a plan will get you the quality of educator that you want. And that combined with those that are already dedicated would give you that excellence that you're requesting and that you're thinking about. I don't think we're looking at the capitalist system to solve our problem. We ought to be, I think.
I don't think this is the time, Senator Pertullo, to get into a debate over the capitalist system and how it fits the education program. I would, though, Mr. Chairman, like to take a minute and talk about the Anchorage audit, since you brought it up, and I too have looked at that audit, and I'm sure, like most of them, you can read the numbers and make the numbers do whatever you want. I did talk with the director of the audit, the principal from the firm who did the audit, at quite a length about the audit, and his indication was that there were some constraints because of what specifically the legislature and the Anchorage Assembly had asked be the result of their audit. There were some constraints on the audit, and that there probably were other areas that they could have gotten into and could have made some more far-reaching suggestions, and they did. he did indicate that they did leave hundreds of pages of their work papers with the Anchorage School District for them to do as they will with them, that has the basic information necessary to accomplish some of those things. So I'd encourage the Anchorage School District to use those as they would have. And then your comment about the minor amount of dollars that may be saved in some of the efficiencies that could be made, and I agree with that, but the fact that they're minor dollars doesn't mean that we shouldn't do them, because there's the perception. And I think if the people get the perception that the school districts are doing their darndest to cut down and to make sure they're efficiently spending their dollars, we'll be a long way then toward getting where we need to get to get the discussion going as to where our education dollars need to be and where we're going to get the money to pay for them.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. Other questions, Mr. Stassman? Thank you very much, sir. We've got, let's go to Fairbanks. There's someone with some time constraints there. Mr. John Davies with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, are you still online in Fairbanks? Please proceed, Mr. Davies.
John Davies, I'm with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. We do have some other people from the Assembly and the school district here. I appreciate the opportunity to get on at this point. I have some meetings in my office this morning I'd like to get to. I'd like to make my comments very brief, just to indicate a general support for not only full funding, but adequate funding for education. We are confident that Rick Cross, our superintendent, has brought forward a lean maintenance-level budget the last 3 years, and that his budget that he's working on now will be in that same vein. It's my understanding that if we were to full funds, that is $50,000 level per student, that that would effectively be a cut of 5% in what we would think is a maintenance level budget when we take into account standard numbers for inflation and increases in students. We are quite concerned that you look seriously at not just maintenance level, but at improving our quality of education. We think that the classroom sizes are too high as they are right now. We need to look seriously at being able to improve that situation. When you start talking about making even a 5% cut in the school budget, you're talking about cutting programs, you're talking about cutting teachers. Right now, teachers represent something like 80% of the budget. And that's a pretty efficient delivery of service, I would say. So I think that we have to look very carefully at the whole budget and look seriously at not only maintaining the level of excellence that we have now, but figuring out where we can increase it. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Petula.
Oh, is that 80% of the budget, including the capital construction funding that's required, transportation, the whole area of educational support, do teachers get 80% of all that combined?
No, that 80% is of the operating budget. And I have addressed all of our concerns about debt retirement. We are very concerned about the, since this bill doesn't really address that, I haven't really raised that issue. We're very concerned that the plans for debt retirement include a recognition that we're going to have to build new schools. My estimate is that in the Fairbanks area, to meet the demand here, we're going to be building approximately one new school per year for at least the next 5 years. And I don't see that we're planning adequately for that need.
Well, of course, boroughs and many educators supported House Bill 37 that wiped out the opportunity for school construction in areas that you're speaking to. You'd better have a new look and revisit that very soon, or you're going to be in deep trouble with 100% funding for school construction, one, because you're never going to get in Class 1 schools, I don't think.
I agree with that.
Mr. Davies, thank you very much. And while we're in Fairbanks, why don't we take a former Board of Education member. Ms. Hall, are you still there? Sue Hall in Fairbanks?
Yes, I'm here.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Alaska PTA, and we support full funding of education, not simply full funding of already inadequate unit values. And that's what I'd like to direct my comments to today. Dr. Sippel's recommended reduction cannot, in our opinion, be justified, but also, in our view, neither can funding the $60,000 unit value be justified, in as much as it's inadequate. It's the same value as when the foundation was created, and obviously that has been eroded over the years by inflation and other things. Now, we recognize that some larger communities have been somewhat protected from that by falling property values, which has triggered an extra payment from the state. Those values have stabilized, and so districts will not be receiving that protection from the effects of inflation. And we're very concerned about that. Earlier this morning, in response to Senator Couture's question, the response to Stanton said this is full funding under the current system, and any inequities in the system will need to be addressed, I presume, as Senator Couture alluded to, by supplemental request and other requests. We would urge you to fully fund education, not just fully fund this inadequate unit, and that the legislature has a responsibility to fund adequately and to eliminate inequities within the system. With the report card bill last year, local community members have the opportunity to hold schools more accountable, and we're, as an organization, certainly interested in doing that. But with inadequate funding and contractual agreements as they are, and other limitations on discretionary spending, the truth of accountability will be somewhat meaningless, because parents and school board members will learn quickly that improvements or meeting needs will be almost impossible. The PTA believes inadequate funding and then holding schools accountable. Just in closing, I'd like to mention that in the past few days, I've been receiving pleas to the legislature from local units regarding funding, which the state PTA will be hand delivering to the legislature next week. PTA units had only 1 week to respond to our request for action, and yet they called an emergency board meeting and responded far beyond our initial expectations. I assure you there is strong sentiment among local PTA leaders that the unit value as presently structured is inadequate and should be protected from inflationary erosion. We urge you to fully fund education, not just to fully fund an inadequate unit. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hall, thank you very much. Why don't we move to Anchorage? We have several people desiring to testify. The first person on my list is Bonnie Hardy.
My name is Bonnie Hardy. I live at 5500 Nassau Lane, Anchorage, Alaska 99516. I am president of the Alaska Association for Community Education and here to speak to you today on their behalf. Our membership includes community school specials, school teachers, principals, superintendents, community school class instructors, and most importantly, volunteers. I would like to encourage you to join us for Council 5 in addressing the full and early support for education, and particular funding for community schools. Council 5 has reached today with a maintenance level funding of $600,000 that was cut from the government's proposed budget in January. I would like to ask the Senate to endorse community school funding, the similar $600,000 maintenance level appropriation. Last to pass legislation in 1975 to implement community education programs in local neighborhoods. Funding is appropriated by the legislature and the Department of Education distributes the funds school districts based on the school foundation funding formula. School districts must apply for community education funding through an annual grant application process. In 1978, first-year community schools were funded. There were 37 districts receiving $901,031. An increase to an all-time funding high in 1986, with 49 districts sharing $4,075,400. Funding for fiscal year 1991 is $600,000. Of the 48 districts who applied and received grants, six districts received grants of more than $20,000, four districts grants of less than $20,000, 12 received grants of less than $10,000, and 26 districts received grants of less than $5,000. Money received from the state, combined with the excellent level of support from local districts, due to coordinate classes and activities for children and adults, before and after school child care programs, operate preschools, provide enriching activities in the daytime school program, open
to both facilities and provide resources to each community and network with other agencies and organizations to promote services and avoid duplication of services. Community Education Alaska makes good dollars and cents. Community schools generate thousands of volunteers, contributed over 180,000 hours of community service last year alone. Community Education provides a good return on public investment in schools by keeping them open for people of all ages to be used as a community center, ways of classes constructed separate and additional community facilities. When school budgets are cut, community schools help recruit volunteers and other resources to make important opportunities available to students and teachers, opportunities which might otherwise be brought to $0. Over the years, Community Education has continued to provide methods to involve parents and community schools to support the elements of the education system. Moving on, and that continues funding from the legislature. I would like to invite you to the Michigan local community schools and the next visit home. We are proud of the services we offer our communities around the state and would like to share them with you. Closing, I encourage the support of community education by restoring $600,000 maintenance loan that is extended. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Thank you. While we're in Anchorage, let's take someone else. Abby Hensley. Smirchich?
Yes.
Please proceed.
I am the present local association president for the teachers union, and I wanted to speak about things that have been happening in our schools in the last 10 years. Since 1982, the Sitka High School has lost one social studies teacher, one English teacher, one physical ed teacher, three vocational ed teachers, and these are positions that have been eliminated from the Sitka High School. All of the student population has stayed between 400 and 450 the whole time. We do need full adequate funding for education. Also, I just want to comment that having been involved both in the budgeting and the negotiating process, that when you try to do these processes before funding, it's kind of like trying to custom paint an automobile in the dark. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. very much. My apologies. Questions? If not, thank you very much. Why don't we move to Soldotna? I have Richard Swarner with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Mr. Swarner?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this on these bills. We are in favor of the urban funding proposal, and as mentioned by Representative Navarre, the opened the session today. Not only are we in favor of full funding, but I think that the distinction needs to be made between full and adequate funding. I think if you go back to the state constitution, it's fairly evident that education had a high priority with the founding fathers of our state. We still subscribe to that idea today. Can you tell me a little bit about the Kenai district down here and why we would be in favor of increasing the unit value and also the funding of full funding of transportation and debt service? I'd just like to review it. Things with you. I think it's important that we have early funding and overhead that allows us to do proper planning, and it also allows us to get out on the out into the job market and hire best available teachers if we know what our funding is at the early stage of the game. It's been a lot of emphasis in the state in the last couple of years for accountability and improving education. We believe that can be accomplished by hiring the best teachers available. And we need to know what the funding level will be in order for us to go out into the market in April, May, and June and hire the folks that are good teachers. I think that everyone recognizes that the good teachers have many job offers from many districts, not only in the state of Alaska, but also nationwide. In this particular district, there are a lot of programs that we do not have. I don't think our system is accepted. We do not have elementary counselors. We do not have elementary art. We do have elementary PE. We have some limited music programs at the elementary level. And our nursing services are fairly limited. We find this to be extremely necessary for us to deal with the medically fragile students that we have at the special education program. Some of these students that are in our system down here is mind-boggling. The medications that are required to be administered to these students, and we just think that it's necessary to have a professional nurse there in order to help these students. We'll have several mandated programs that come down to us, particularly in the special education area and also the bilingual. These are not state mandated, but they are federally mandated programs, and we are required to provide the services. If we don't, we have a strong advocacy group out there that will take us to court, and I think that the state needs to recognize that. The average salary in this district, of all major districts in the state, happens to be the lowest at the present time. Our average salary is $41,112 for the current year. We do not believe that this salary is an excessive salary, very comparable to what the market demands are, particularly in the state, if not on the low side. Also point out that the administrative costs in this district are one of the lowest in the state, so I think that we're wasting a lot of funds in terms of administration. If you hear this, you would cry all the time that you need to cut administration. We've done that in this district over the last 5 years, and as a result, the percentage of our budget is the lowest in any districts in the state, and we are very We're anticipating asking the Borough Assembly for the maximum allowable under the law, which will bring us right to the cap. That equates to a mill equivalency of 8.1 mills in this district. Several years ago, on our pupil transportation, we brought pupil transportation out for bid. We reduced the bill by $750,000. In this district, pupil transportation is a relatively large number. That was a direct cost savings to the state. Still, we have continued to be penalized by being prorated, even though we have increased the efficiency and the cost of providing pupil transportation. We do not have excess funds in this district.